open the Senate Revenue Committee. We are going to go into work session in a moment on House Bill 2299. Just for everyone's, if there's amendments out there that are being drafted, being worked on, we're going to find a new vehicle for them. So for wind power, I think we're going to hold off on this one. And for any others, and Dexter, if you hear this, I think we're just going to find a new vehicle. Although I would have the question for counsel of how, in terms of relating clauses, would just a general relating to taxation be a decent vehicle if we wanted to move some of these amendments? Open a work session on House Bill 2299. Okay, Mazin.
Okay, Mr. Chair, House Bill 2299 have, as you have indicated, been changing with time. But the first amendment, I think, that needs to be brought to your attention is the conflict amendment. And the conflict amendment, the latest one that is the B-24 amendment. And this basically resolves conflict with other bills that have already passed and became in the process of becoming law. These bills are Senate Bill 215 and House Bill 2188, and that's why the conflict amendment is at 24 now, rather than when it choose to be at 20. The bill, in order for it to be able to develop any further, needs to have this conflict amendment adopted.
Any questions or discussions on the B-24? That is the conflict amendment. Would accept a motion to adopt the conflict amendments.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon has moved the -B-24 conflict amendments to House Bill 2299 in discussion. Objections. So ordered. Maybe we'll start with the 12s, which are the county ones.
Yes, Mr.
Do you want to? Please, Matt.
Mr. Chair, the -12 amendments primarily take out the issue of the utilities or the subsidy assessed utilities while under construction, take it out of the language or the bill by deleting the 34 C, D, and E out of the bill.
We went through this couple days ago. Anything else that we might need to know before act upon these?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michelle Dyster, League of Oregon Cities. We continue to urge your support of the B-12 amendments, and I know that there has been in conversations on this committee some concern expressed with regard to the fact that power companies are in a different environment these days, and I think that there is some discussions that need to be had with regard to how these are going to be treated in the future. Therefore, the League of Oregon Cities has committed to sitting down with Mr. Anderson, among others, and we would hope to involve the Department of Revenue and other technical greater minds to help us parse through some of the issues associated with energy-producing centrally assessed companies and how they ought to be treated in the future under the new environment of deregulation.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Jim Anderson of Vista Corporation. At this point in time, we would have no objection to you adopting the -12s and eliminating further conversation around the -19 and -13 amendments. And I agree with what was just said, that we in good faith are going to sit down during the interim and try to resolve this issue for energy companies that are centrally assessed in the state of Oregon. And I spoke earlier today with Senator Farioli, and he has graciously said that he would like to sit in with this, help it, facilitate it if possible, and see that it comes to some sort of resolution to bring back in 2005. I'd also like to thank you and the committee very much for your patience on this. I know it's been trying, but it's been trying for us too, and we'll be back at you next session.
Yeah. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Anderson, and your company, Vista. I think you guys both on the previous bill that we worked on, which related to this bill, and these two amendments have been actually just a real pleasure to work with.
Thank you.
So thank you. Thank you. Questions for the panel?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Ringo.
Do you want a motion?
Please.
Move the Dash 12 amendments.
Senator Ringo has moved the Dash 12 amendments to House Bill 2299. Discussion. Any objections? So ordered. Okay, so B. 18s versus Mr. Mike, do you want to come up and talk about the 18s versus the new ones that you just had?
Chair Deckert, members of the committee, my name is Mike Burton. I'm the Assistant Director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. I'm sure you remember the discussion in preceding hearings about whether or not prevailing wages, or actually it was about Oregon workers are getting the job and how we might get to that. There was a proposal to address that by incorporating prevailing wages. There is an issue from business perception that that's a negative business climate issue. So we facilitated a conversation around trying to address that issue and highlighting the fact that the specific amendment would add to add language to a requirement to get to a fourth or fifth year in the current basic enterprise zone program. So there's an additional incentive available to companies that pay 150% of average county wage. And the B18 version would suggest that, in addition, there may also be an agreement related to prevailing wages. That authority is essentially in the law now because the law says that there can be any other agreement reasonably required by its own sponsors. The department proposed a compromise, which I understand is not being well received again by the business representatives here. But that was the compromise is the amendment B23, which was to call out that it's a two-sided agreement, that it's any other conditions that the language says, any additional mutually specified requirements, so agreed to by the business and the zone sponsors. It's not a one-sided discussion. And secondly, added to a list of illustrative examples to highlight that it's not just about construction labor. This is permissive language in both cases. It's already covered in the existing law, and it's a potential condition, if agreed to by both parties, that would get to an additional incentive to a company to locate or invest in Oregon jurisdictions. I would point out that in the illustrations we've cited, we've included very common topics for discussion among companies that are considering siting in a community, and the conditions are not one-sided. The first one we list, item I, on line 4 says funding for infrastructure or services. It's not uncommon for businesses to say, we'll invest in your community, we'll expand our existing plant, but we want you to make some investments on the public side to facilitate that effort. So we're trying to call out that this is a negotiated process, it's a two-sided process, and to that end, we think it's a good solution. But we would leave this to the pleasure of the committee, and I'm sure that you'll hear different perspectives after I leave. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Which set of amendments requires the prevailing wage?
Chair Deckert, Senator Ringo, neither set of amendments. The amendments we're talking about are B-15 and B-23. Neither of them requires prevailing wages.
B-18
and 23.
Okay. So the department drafted the 23s as more of a compromise position.
Okay.
The folks who oppose the 18s, my understanding, oppose these.
Gotcha.
Don't like the 18s, but would rather the 18s, though still opposing them strongly, than the B-23s. Further questions?
Move 18.
That would be the... Thank you very much, Mike.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Could you please clarify me? Does the bill as stand without these amendments require the prevailing wage?
No.
It does not.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo, or Senator Corcoran.
I move the dash 18 amendments.
Senator Corcoran has moved the dash 18 amendments to House Bill 2299. Discussion. Kara, please call the roll.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Dunn?
Aye.
Ringo?
Aye.
Star?
No.
Ariana?
No.
Becker?
Aye. The motion carries. Okay, so we have two outstanding. We have Senator Starr's, which is the
Dash 21s,
and then we have the wind power one. Mr. Mobahill, do you want to come up, and anyone else from the counties? And Senator Starr, would you like to?
Yeah, no, thank you, Mr. Chair. The goal here is to provide at least equal footing for cities and counties as it relates to forwarding a SIP project proposal to OECD, and I'm trying to work with Mr. Mobahill from Washington County on this. Apparently, the way that the amendments drafted is there's a concern about it would preclude in these discussions any city less than 60,000 population. If it happened to be within one of these jurisdictions where a SIP project was proposed, to even be able to be at the table as it relates to the agreement that the jurisdiction, the county would make, we haven't had time to go back and get an additional draft from council because of the turnaround time. I think we have some relatively simple changes to the bill that would accomplish, I think, my goal, and I think that Washington County at least would be supportive of. I'm not sure if there's a will in the committee to do something conceptually or not. I'd look to the committee whether there's a willingness to do that. Short of that, willingness to adopt some changes conceptually, we will serve notice that if this bill moves forward to a conference committee, the possibility of making the changes in a conference committee, provided we can get support from the chair on the House side, the originating chair of the House committee to those amendments. That's an option that we have, or we can suspend the rules for purpose of a conceptual amendment here. I put that, I guess, to the will of the committee, whether there's a willingness. I know there's general reluctance to conceptual amendments, but we did it yesterday in another committee that I serve on. So I guess I'd throw that, and maybe Mr. Mobahill could briefly explain what those conceptual amendments might be, and then we can make a determination whether it's too complex to attempt to do and here on this work session today, or we can have a separate shot at it maybe as this bill moves through the process. But
Mr. Mobahill.
Mr. Chairman, Dennis Mobahill, Washington County, Government Affairs. I had County Council look at this last night. after we got the amendments, the B-21, and it was his opinion that it is unclear whether either the city or the county can make the request or whether or not both must make the request. And so the language we think needs to be in there is that you don't want to have any ambiguity, especially with an SIP candidate, of who they go talk to, or get into a situation where you have them go talk to one, make the deal, and come back and then try to force the others into accepting it. So a simple word change that says it's the city and the county co-equally are as who do these SIP processes. That was number one. The other is that it was unclear, or better put, is that county council felt that the way the language is that it eliminates any role for any city that does not have a population of 60,000. So again, it's, I think, very simple just to tweak that so that it makes it clear that that isn't what you're trying to do in this. And I'm from listening to this all the way through the process, that's I'm sure the committee wouldn't want to do that. So that's the two changes. And I do not have the language exactly. In fact, I would prefer that we have LC do that.
So. I don't see Dexter here. Okay. Thank you.
And I suppose for the record, too, is that, you know, that what the Senator Starr is looking for here, we are in agreement with, which is that you go forward equally. I mean, that's good business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. My understanding is this will end up in conference, this bill, and there will be other vehicles, which I'd like to have Dexter confirm that. That should be come for us. Here we go. Can you come up, Dexter? You're just the man we're looking for. Yeah. Hi, Dexter.
Mr. Chair, members, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. I probably missed the question in coming over here.
Do you want to start, Senator Starr?
Well, the proposal would be to have the amendment changed or drafted so the city and the county would jointly basically walk through this process together rather than one or the other taking the lead. They would kind of be co-equal partners, both with submitting the application to OECDD and then working on the agreement with the proposed project. And then there's concern about whether or not the way that we've defined municipality, that we would eliminate any local city that to be involved at any level if they didn't have a population of over 60,000. As it relates to their impact by the fee that's negotiated in the agreement. One option we have is to conceptually amend the bill before us now, which is difficult to do, and the other one would be to perhaps run an amendment at some point when this bill may be in a conference committee.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, it would seem to me that the first part of what you're proposing would take some thought, because what happens if at some part in the process there suddenly is disagreement between the city and county as to what to do? A conceptual amendment, I think that needs to be thought out a little bit more than would be possible with a conceptual amendment.
Well, I think at this point, Mr. Chair, that we will try to take a stab at this if the bill is in a conference committee or we have another vehicle to get it done, and we can move on. I appreciate the committee's indulgence in the discussion and their consideration of the Dash 21s at this point. I think they need clearly some further refinement, and we just don't have the time necessarily this afternoon to make that happen.
Thank you. On the B-25s, the wind power ones, do you have a quick gauge of relating clauses that they've been working pretty determinedly on that, but Judge Pryor, representing the counties, has asked for some more time, which I think is very understandable, to look at the B-25s. Do you have a quick gauge of other relating clauses that amendment might fit into?
Mr. Chair, that would fit into any relating to taxation bill, because it is a property tax exemption in its essence.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, committee, I think we've now considered all of the possible amendments to House Bill 2299.
So, Mr. Chairman, there was an adoption of B-24, B-12, B-18.
Correct. The 12s were adopted, the 24s, which were
conflict resolution,
conflicts, and the 18s,
which was the prevailing one.
Yes.
And is Senator Starr dissuaded from B-21 because of language questions?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's a little bit too much ambiguity there, and we may attempt to address this issue and at a later point in this bill in the process, or maybe another bill that we can identify.
Further discussion?
Further discussion. We don't have a motion on the table, though.
Oh, we don't?
You mean on...
Do we?
No. I do not believe anyone. So we've adopted amendments, and the bill sets before us. If someone would like to move the bill, we can move it. If there's not the will to do that, then we can... go out of work session.
So moved.
Senator Corcoran has moved House Bill 2299 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion of the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I am reluctant to vote for bills that allow for property tax reductions, and I understand the need for economic stimulus and economic development. It's really hard to know whether it's really hard to know on what occasions that's accomplished or when it's just giving a tax benefit away that the company would move in anyway. And it's very difficult to know. I also am cognizant that this bill was originally designed to help rural Oregon. I think that's important. And I will vote for the bill, but I have reluctance on these kinds of programs.
Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support virtually everything that's in this bill. I think it's good policy. I think I appreciate the work that OECD and many have done to get the bill to this point. However, with the inclusion of what I think is an uneconomic development piece of the bill that was just adopted by this committee, I'm going to be forced to oppose the bill with that language in the bill. It's unfortunate. I don't think that at the end of the day that's going to help encourage economic development, not only in rural parts of the state, but in the parts that I represent, in the more suburban populated part of the state. Has a great concern there.
Further discussion. House Bill 2299. Chair, please call the roll.
Mr. Corcoran?
Aye.
Cannon?
Aye.
Ringo?
Aye.
Starr?
I'll vote no and serve notice of possible minority report.
Really?
No.
Minority report.
And, Mr. Chairman, I need to make a vote explanation before you drop the gavel.
Okay.
Okay.
He votes aye. Senator Farrelly.
Senator Deckert and colleagues, I've been asked to support my colleague in a minority report. To address his concern that I've heard expressed by jurisdictions in my area also about the prevailing wage issue. I want it clearly known that this bill does benefit rural Oregon. It's primarily in that object, and that I understand that Minority Report will try to deal with that one issue. I'm somewhat skeptical about the prospects for the passage of a Minority Report, having viewed the history of a Minority Report in the previous two or three sessions. I don't think we've adopted one.
Republicans aren't used to them.
And maybe that's a good training ground. I hope not. So I will support my colleague in the Minority Report and vote no on this bill. But I think it's one of those interesting situations where a single issue, I think, crosses up an otherwise excellent public policy bill, at least from my perspective. I just don't have any jurisdictions out there that honestly believe the prevailing wage will help them attract new businesses to their communities. So I will support the Minority Report, vote no on this bill, and then we'll see how things play out on the floor. I do support every concept and expect that the Minority Report will differ from the principal bill in one respect only, and that is the adoption of the B-18 Amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I vote no.
Just for clarity, on the amendment, the -18 that was adopted, in reality it really changes nothing. The locality today could require prevailing wages. It just puts it in writing, I guess, but it really does not change anything that is not available to that municipality or to that county today. Senator Corcoran and Senator Hannah. Senator Hannah.
Mr. Chairman, I took a different approach. I supported it because it was permissive. And my good friend from John Day, I would be probably siding with you if it was mandatory, but it wasn't mandatory. It was permissive. And I've always been a firm believer of freedom of choice. So as long as that prevails, I think we still have a free country.
Senator Corcoran.
Well, Mr. Chair, I support prevailing wage for a very obvious reason. I mean, we heard testimony. I don't think you can talk about realistic economic development when you provide a bunch of jobs for people from the South. That doesn't do a damn thing for Oregon. And another point that I want to make is the prevailing wage is set the way it is because it is a family wage job. I mean, the fact of the matter is these are skilled workers that are expected to do this work. So I think there's, and we had testimony showing that there's public projects that are done with prevailing wages and done more cheaply than ones that don't use prevailing wage. You know, the last thing I'll say is, you know, some years ago, the state of Washington, AFL-CIO, did a study of, you know, what does this concept of family wage mean? And the way they put it in perspective, and this has been probably 7 or 8 years ago now, so the numbers would be a little bit raw, but basically, at the time, a family wage job was in the area of around $34,000 a year, and the reason they called it family wage was that for a family of four, if the net income were less than that, they basically would be a net tax user instead of a taxpayer. And so when you talk about rural economic development, whether it's in Drain or John Day, the fact of the matter is you don't want to just open up a bunch of McDonald's and pay minimum wage. You want to get some jobs in there that are decent jobs. And you know, because this isn't mandatory and because prevailing wage is a good idea anyway, and because there's plenty of groups here in Oregon that can provide the work. I just talked to Steve Wildish yesterday from Wildish Brothers. They were co-contractors with Hunt on the Autzen Stadium improvements. And, you know, Steve Wildish doesn't have a problem paying prevailing wage. I don't know why we would make such a fuss about it in terms of rural economic development.
Anything further before I drop the gavel on House Bill 2299? The bill passes. Would anyone like to carry the bill?
Okay.
Sounds like you may be carrying before it a bill. Okay, I will carry. If no one wants to, I will carry the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'll carry it.
Would you like to?
It's rural Oregon. Yeah, I'm right. I'll carry it.
There you go. Okay, Senator Hannon. Well,
I'd love to carry a report against a minority report anyway. Well, I'm not in the minority.
Those Republicans just fight, fight, fight.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 3582. The room can clear.
Here's a quote from George Bush. Now that I am no longer president, I find that I do not win every game of golf I play.
Dr. Yates.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Richard Yates with Legislative Revenue. House Bill 3582 basically directs the Association of Oregon Counties to establish a work group to study how highway funds are allocated to the counties. It describes the or certain aspects that should be taken into consideration in the study. Requires that they report back to the Legislative Assembly by January 2, 2005. Directs the county to establish the work group, which includes county officials, but also allows them to appoint non-county officials to that working group. It also provides for funding for the expenses of that group through intergovernmental agreements with ODOT to use some of the money that would be apportioned to the counties to cover those expenses. It sunsets January 2nd, 2006, and it declares an emergency and takes effect upon passage.
Thank you. Mr. Penhalla. And Mr. Penhalla is the only one I have signed up, so if you'd like to testify, just please come forward.
This is a fundraising bill for the Association of Oregon Cities. It's a raid on the ODOT.
Counties.
Is that what this is?
Counties. Counties.
Counties.
Okay.
Counties.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Chair.
Thieves, right.
Yeah. Who members. Consulting.
He's wearing black band.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhalla, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. And, Mr. Chair, I signed up on the second line expecting that Representative Hunt would be here to talk about his bill. This is a bill that was introduced by Representative Hunt and in its original form would have changed the distribution formula of the county's share of the state highway funds. Currently, that revenue is allocated among the counties based upon registered vehicles, the proportional number of registered vehicles in each county to the total number of registered vehicles in the state. And 3582 in its original form would have used a 10-year projection for allocating those revenues. In testimony on the House side, we testified in opposition to the bill as it was introduced, indicated that we had identified a number of issues with regard to that allocation formula, and we're going to do a study during the interim on our own and look at different options. As you may or may not be aware, most other states that we have checked with use multiple factors in their allocation formula. So we are going to take a look at that and bring something back to the next legislature. Representative Hunt wanted to make certain that we did what we said we were going to do and felt that it needed to be incorporated into his bill. So we have agreed to that, reluctant to have the legislature mandating the Association of Oregon Counties to do anything, Mr. Chair.
There's been no evidence of that for years.
of doing anything.
Yes.
Well, maybe that will change with this interim, Mr. Chair, Representative or Senator Corcoran. To make sure that we do something with regard to this, you have House Bill 3582 before you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Corcoran.
So, Mr. Penhollow, you guys could do this on your own. You don't need ODOT money to do it.
That is, Mr. Chair, Senator, I've been in the House most of the session so far, and I apologize, Senator Corcoran. You're correct. We were going to do this study anyway. We have resources set aside in our current budget to look at this. But again, there was a feeling, certainly on the House side and with the sponsor of the bill, that this needed to be documented in legislation. So we will do it, whether this bill passes or not.
I just wanted to make it clear, maybe I wasn't in the introduction, it would not be money that would flow to the state, highway money. It's money that flows through the state to the counties anyway. So they're preempting other county uses of the funds, not state uses of the funds.
But,
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I understand what Dr. Yates just explained, but let me indicate for the record, I will not be in a position of supporting a transportation package as long as I know the money is being used for studies. We don't need to spend transportation monies that are limited by their own nature to spend to do studies. If a study is going to be done, let the study be done. But we don't need to mandate the county, number one. Number two, if Representative Hunt wants to direct the counties to do something, maybe you should consider running for the county commissioner instead of the legislature. Maybe his home is not here in Salem. Maybe his home is elsewhere. But the fact remains, I'm not going to support a transportation plan that takes limited resources to fix up our highways and roads in this state and do another study with it.
Thank you. Senator Corcoran, do you have something further?
I was just going to say that I understand that it's county road funds, but it's still road funds.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Farrelly?
Mr. Chairman, the issue for me would be that mandating this to the counties with an emphasis on Willamette bridges will certainly cause some eyebrows to be raised elsewhere. We've got bridge failures across the Snake River that have caused terrible problems for shipping and transport on the east side of the state. I'm sure as on an economy of scale basis, every bit as bad as anything that you could possibly imagine on the I-5 corridor. And I just was curious if I could get Mr. Penhollow to describe how that committee might be constituted, whether it will be geographically well distributed across the state or because of its emphasis on Willamette Valley bridges that would be concentrated on the west side of the state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, let me comment first on the Willamette River bridges. These would be limited to county bridges over the Willamette Rivers, which there are several up and down the Willamette River from Eugene to Portland.
Yeah. There would be no county bridges across the Snake River.
No, there would not be. but yes, we will have representation from across the state. AOC does have a regional distribution within its organization, and we would be asking for county officials from each of those areas to come and participate in this process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further conversation or discussion? Thank you, Mr. Penhollow. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. You and now.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, my question was answered. I have no particular feeling about this bill one way or the other.
Well, you have to vote.
Yeah, but maybe not. Maybe you should poll the other members as well.
I have.
Yeah. And there?
There's three in favor. I believe two opposed. You know?
Yeah. That's why you're committee chair of revenue.
You are the swing vote.
And so Mr. Penhollow indicated to me that they, I guess I'd like to just review his testimony about whether he feels there's a need to make this a mandate or not.
I'd like more time.
Mr. Penhall, I have no desire to put you on the spot on this issue, but I did want to know if you intended to do this study anyway among your members. Mr. Chairman, what were the mechanisms that you intended to use to pay for that study?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, we have some resources set aside. We're hoping that we could get by with the counties participating, paying the expenses of their members, and using funds that we have already in our budget to provide for some outside assistance in gathering information, looking at various options, doing computer runs. That becomes very important in this process, so everybody has an opportunity to see how any particular formula affects their county. So we do have funds budgeted already. As I had indicated earlier, we had identified this allocation system as a problem that we wanted to look at. It had come up from within our own organization. The bill does provide that we could use funds off the top of the county share of the highway funds, but we are certainly not inclined to do that. Do not believe that the cost of this would necessarily require us to do that. However, if it did, being the type of organization that we are, we would need to go through a process to make sure that all of our members, all the counties, agreed to accessing that money for expenses over and above what we would already have budgeted.
Mr. Chairman, that leads me to conclude that the bill is probably a great idea that the League of the Associated Oregon Counties already had.
Thank you. Senator Starr.
Well, I guess my question for Bill is, do you have has the AOC identified the cost outside of this bill, what they thought it would cost?
We have set aside or identified a cost of about $20,000 for outside probably economic advisory input on the process. So we've kind of set that as a number. We have not done any really hard calculations on what it would be. We haven't put out any kind of an RFP to determine what kind of responses we might get back, but we would focus our costs on our budget on those costs that wouldn't otherwise be provided by the counties that participate in the study.
Thank you for that.
Mr. Chairman,
Are we in work session?
We're in a public hearing.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I was going to suggest that we end the day's session and at least leave the options open if somebody wanted to further consider it.
Further questions or thank you. Further?
Well, Mr. Chairman, my comment. I just rather not spend time on this bill. I don't think it does anything.
So Senator Starr has the suggestion of just deleting 22, 23, and then one on the final page of the bill. So we'll come back to this bill. We'll let Representative Hunt work this bill and see if there's the will of the committee and maybe consider Senator Starr's suggestion of deleting those two and
line one on the back.
I left the relating class, Mr. Chairman.
I noticed that too. We could apply that to schools, mental health dollars.
Mr. Chairman, this is a bill worth holding.
Close hearing on House Bill 3582. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3616. Welcome back, Mazen.
It's good to be back, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The file on this bill is still small, unlike 1999. But let me go quickly on the bill 3616 basically deals with the special assessment program for the wildlife habitat. It allows the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to designate certain land eligible for wildlife habitat special assessment. And the bill also puts into process the way by which the designation occurs through an elaborate way of defining steps. Just to give a background on this issue, the special assessment for properties are usually the farmland, forest land, and then the open space special assessment, which wildlife habitat currently works through that segment of special assessment. What this bill would do, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, is take the wildlife habitat into the first two, which is designate them either as a farmland or as a forest land special assessment without having to go through the other processes of declaring something as an open spaces before it makes it wildlife habitat. Having said that, the bill is establishes in law somewhat of more permissive ways of how to do that, and in doing so, it might have some impacts on local governments, cities and counties, on the way they would be able to collect taxes on properties that go out of the special assessment designation. Because at current law, if they do, they would have to compensate for the time that they have been out of that designation. This allows the new designation to be in effect without having to pay that elapsed taxes or period of time. However, the bill does have in it an opt-out clause for counties and local governments that if they are impacted economically negatively, that they are able to petition and get that remedied so they don't have that impact. And in that sense, the negative impacts on local governments is mitigated through this opt-out procedure.
Thank you, Madison. Mr. Bowman, Mr. Barsotti.
Thank you, Chairman Deckert, members of the committee. My name is Andrew Bowman. I'm the Private Lands Conservation Council with Defenders of Wildlife. I participated in the work group that produced this bill, and have also been involved with the drafting of the bill and the amendments, and so I'd like to give a short background about the bill. Before I do so, I would like to mention that Representative Dingfelder, who is the sponsor of this bill, would have liked to have been here today, but she has to attend a funeral, and so in her place I will try to describe the bill. As part of legislation enacted into law in 2001 related to conservation incentives for private landowners, that was House Bill 3564, the legislature directed the Oregon Department of Agriculture and the Oregon Department of Forestry to review state statutes, rules, policies, and programs that affect landowner decisions to implement conservation strategies. The agencies were directed to complete this review in consultation with other relevant state agencies and public and private organizations and to report back to the legislature this session. In May of last year, the Departments of Agriculture and Forestry convened the Conservation Incentives Work Group. The work group consisted of a diverse set of representatives from numerous stakeholder groups, including farmers, ranchers, timber producers, local governments, conservation organizations, and many state and federal agencies. The work group developed recommendations for improvements to incentive programs that will encourage landowners and businesses to invest voluntarily in the improvement of natural resources. In February of this year, the work group included all of its recommendations in a comprehensive report to the legislature. The bill before you today, HB 3616, contains provisions that implement the work group's recommendations regarding two existing incentive programs, the Wildlife Habitat Conservation and Management Program, and the Stewardship Agreement Program. Specifically, the bill rewrites the statutes that govern the Wildlife Habitat Conservation and Management Program to improve its administration by the Department of Fish and Wildlife, Department of Revenue, and County Assessors. The bill also provides a mechanism by which cities and counties can elect to participate in the Habitat Program or opt out of the program if their participation creates an economic burden. Current law does not allow counties that are now participating in the program to opt out. The bill also rewrites the statutes that govern the Stewardship Agreement Program, which is currently administered only by the Department of Forestry. I will not go into much more detail there because Mike Barsotti from the Department of Forestry will address that program. After being amended, HB 3616 was unanimously voted out of the House Water Committee and the House Revenue Committee. Among other things, the amendments deleted the sections of the bill that addressed the tax treatment of lands subject to conservation easements and also created the mechanism by which cities and counties can opt in and out of the Habitat Program. The amendments, importantly, also removed any opposition to the bill from any interest groups. Reflecting the broad support for the bill, the House approved the bill on May 27 with 48 yes votes and 7 no votes. In addition to Mike Barsotti from the Department of Forestry, there are other individuals here today who participated in the work group and have expertise regarding the bill. To the extent it would help the chair or the committee, I can identify people who might be able to answer substantive questions, though I'm also able to answer most questions. And with that, I'll say thank you for your consideration of HB 3616.
Mr. Barsotti, go ahead and add your testimony.
Vice Chair Farrelly, members of the committee, my name is Mike Barsotti with the Department of Forestry. I work on our incentive programs. Stewardship agreements are a written document that a landowner voluntarily enters with the Department of Forestry. He agrees to go above what's required by law and in return receives some incentive benefits. Well, that program did not hit the mark when we developed that program several years ago. As of now, we only have one landowner involved in the stewardship agreement. So this bill does several things. It allows us to take another run at working with landowners who voluntarily want to manage their land, work with them as an assistant in the technical side rather than a regulator from the law enforcement side. It also responds to what House Bill 3564 asked us to do last session, is to see how we could expand this bill to cover not just farmland, or not just forest land, but also farmland. For example, on the east side, where most landowners are both ranchers and forest landowners, our traditional way of operating within agencies and their individual responsibilities is a landowner would have to work with one agency on his farmland, another agency on his forest land. This bill attempts to, in the joint rulemaking between forestry and ag, will develop a single program where the landowner can then be served by whoever he's comfortable in working with. It also, the third thing that this bill will do with stewardship agreements will provide a greater opportunity to provide some real incentives for landowners who voluntarily want to manage their lands at a level above the minimums.
Thank you very much. Further questions or discussions for the panel? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I do have just a quick technical question.
Yes, please.
Could you describe the opt-out provisions? Perhaps that's a question we should ask the tax jurisdictions, but as I understand this bill, it creates for the first time the option for a county to participate in this program, and then if it subsequently decides that that is becoming a financial burden because of the tax treatment, the differential tax treatment on this land that's not necessarily in production but could be in a conservation easement or a conservation agreement, that they can in fact agree to opt out of the program.
Chair Deckard, Senator Farrelly, if I might answer that question. The bill as written both would require cities and counties to ask for certain lands to be designated as eligible, and they'd have to go through the same process essentially to have those lands undesignated or de-designated. what they would have to do is go back to the Fish and Wildlife Commission, who originally designated the lands, and they'd show that they have an economic burden. And if that was shown, then the Fish and Wildlife Commission must allow them to back out of the program for certain lands. Importantly, any land that's already enrolled in the program wouldn't be affected when the counties opt out. So a landowner wouldn't have that whiplash of lower tax assessment and then a higher one. I hope that answers most of your question. One other thing I guess I should mention is the law that was passed in 2001 allowed counties to opt out by the end of last year, and 22 of 36 counties did. So at this point, only 14 of 36 counties are participating. And one of the things the work group looked at is if counties were to feel comfortable ever opting back in, they needed to know they could opt back out. And so that's what this is designed to do, is to give them that comfort level to basically entice them possibly to participate again.
Just following, Mr. Chairman. Are those counties that agreed or made the decision to opt out under the 2001 law, are they affected by this bill? In other words, you know, the counties agreed that it did not want to participate. Could it now decide that it did want to participate? Or could any of the counties that are currently participants decide for whatever reason they do not wish to participate?
Chair Deckert and Senator Farioli, under the current law, a county that's currently in the program, in other words, did not choose to opt out, it cannot opt out at this point. Now, a county that did opt out can opt out, can opt in, I'm sorry, but if they do opt in, they can never opt out again.
So, Mr. Chairman, the issue of the permissiveness of the bill is sort of a one-way street. If a county opts into this program, it stays in the program.
That's existing law.
Under the existing law.
Correct. And so under this new law, if it were to go through, if a county wasn't in the program, wanted to get back in and try it and determine that it was too much of an economic burden, they could get back out.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I think that's the improvement here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further for the panel? That's all we have signed up. Thank you, Mr. Bowman. Thank you, Mr. Barsotti. I neglected committee to mention that Representative Dingfelder really did want to be here. She's at Representative Jensen's grandson's funeral.
Mr. Chairman, would there be any harm in holding the bill until Representative Jensen and Representative Dingfelder return to the building?
We could do that.
I'd like to move it, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dingfelder came over and explained the bill to me and said in her and Representative Jensen's absence, I'd like to move the bill so we can move it ahead for him.
Okay. I do have a note from her aide asking that we move the bill even in her absence, that you prefer that.
Yeah, it would be fine with me, Mr. Chairman.
Close the public hearing. Open the work session on House Bill 3616.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
I would move House Bill 3616 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hannon has moved House Bill 3616 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Any objections? So ordered. Naringo? Great. Thank you very much. Good day, and we are adjourned till Monday.